It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher at BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. A little breaking recruiting news. We'll get to that right after some sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to your questions on the air.
Louisiana Tech has its quarterback for the 2015 class, number the 22nd commitment for 2015. That means the Bulldogs have three spots left in the 2015 class. Jamar Smith from Meridian High School in Meridian, Mississippi, a three-star dual threat quarterback, number 18 dual threat quarterback in the country and the number 18 player in the state of Mississippi. At one time, had offers from Mississippi State and Memphis. He's also a baseball player. I know there's been some talk about him possibly playing baseball for the Bulldogs as well. Stay tuned to BleedTechBlue.com as we have all the news around this story breaking as it happens. We're still trying to get interview with Jamar to get more information on his commitment. But Jamar right now, I think, is touchdown to interception ratio something like 24-0.
Right, 24-0. And for a dual threat quarterback, you imagine throwing 24 touchdowns. I mean, that's a considerable amount of touchdowns considering some of the kids in the area that are dual threat quarterbacks as well. Most of them have between 10 and 12. 24-0 interceptions, which also proves that he's being smart with the football. Typically turnovers or the lack thereof means that he's probably been well coached, which means that he's a coachable kid as well. Stands 6'1", weighs 220 pounds. I'd say he's certainly a good pickup for Louisiana Tech. I was going to say the Bulldogs, but Mississippi State also recruiting him. So
he is also the son of a former New Orleans Saint and Alabama Crimson Tide, Kenny Smith, a defensive lineman. He's not quite as big as his papa. I think his papa, last measurement I saw from him, he played his last year in the league, I think it was 2011, with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was 6'3", 308.
Oh, hefty.
Hey, I resemble that remark. But he's also, with him being a dual threat quarterback, you want to say, well, what's his rushing statistics? This year, he has 137 carries for 715 yards. It's 5.2 yards a carry, 71.5 yards a game, 200-plus yard games, and 12 rushing touchdowns. So he's accounted for 36 total touchdowns. In his junior season, 11 rushing touchdowns, 3.7 yards a carry, 34 yards a game. He had 20 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. So to see that number, that touchdown to interception ratio improved from 2-1 to 24-0 is really impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. Certainly no doubt about it. You can see some of him. He's on Huddle, Max Preps, all that stuff. You can certainly get on there. He's got a Rivals profile as well, so you can certainly see some of his tape, stuff like that. Personally, I have watched it. Throwing mechanics are fine, which is always something that you're concerned with when you're looking at a dual threat quarterback. You've got to say, well, what are his mechanics like? His mechanics are all right. I would say that maybe he has happy feet in the pocket, regardless of the protection. He is sometimes looking to make plays with his feet, but he's the most typically he's one of, if not the most athletic person on the field. So certainly sometimes he does want to bail and make a big play.
One thing on tape that I saw is he's a cool customer. No matter if he's got defensive lineman or a blitzer in his face, he's still looking downfield trying to make a play. And given that fact, and he still has not thrown an interception, I think this weekend in the playoffs he's playing D'Iberville.
Correct.
I think Jason's posted that. D'Iberville and a four-star junior safety with an offer from LSU will be in that game. Let's see if he makes it through that one without an interception, and I'm sure he's played other athletes as well and still has not thrown an interception. But a good pickup for the Bulldogs, and we'll talk more about recruiting later in the show. With this being a bye week in Louisiana Tech basketball starting this week, we will talk a little hoops, and then we need to get to UAB victory for the Bulldogs, 7 wins on the season. They will also, like we said, it's a bye week, and they'll play Old Dominion next weekend in Norfolk, Virginia, and then we'll host Rice the Saturday after Thanksgiving inside Joe Ie Stadium, a game that, if Tech beats Old Dominion, will be Conference USA Western Division champions already.
Correct, yeah. So, unfortunately, I know a lot of people were looking forward to maybe playing the Owls in Joe Ie Stadium with the Western Division of the conference on the line. Opportunity to host Rice and then beat them and win that conference championship. But personally, I don't think there's any – excuse me, win the Western Division and a stake of the conference championship, have an opportunity to play in that championship game. But honestly, if you can win it a week early – I say win it a week early.
Oh, without a doubt. You just want to win the game. You play to win the game. As my friend Herm Edwards said one time, very apropos. But Tech, of course, victorious 40-24 over the Blazers in a game where they lost Kenneth Dixon on basically the final play of the first half.
Right. Zeros on the clock, basically. Touchdown run, landed on the ball, thought that maybe he just got the wind knocked out of him. And announcers kept saying, oh, he's fine, he just got the wind knocked out of him, he'll be all right. And unfortunately, it's an injury to the midsection.
It's a rib injury, and Kentrell Bryce left the game in the second half with another rib injury. Yeah, you want to know how they are. Well, this far out, let's call it basically a week and a half out from their next game,
right,
it's impossible to project that, especially with rib injuries. Sometimes it just takes time to heal a rib injury. There's nothing you can do.
Well, and a lot of times these rib injuries are up to the player. If the pain is not so much that you can't go out and play, then you go out and play and just try to keep from getting hit in that area.
Which if
you're a running back is
if we've seen Kenneth Dixon in the past, right, he plays with pain. I expect Kenneth to play.
I do too. Especially with this off week. This off week happened at a perfect time with those injuries coming. I think Kentrell Bryce has certainly looked worse than Kenneth did. Vontarius Doris, I mean, he hit him really hard right in the. I mean, Bryce was outstretched. He had his body totally stretched, sacking the quarterback, and Dora hit him right in the ribs.
I personally would expect both of them to play, but if one of them isn't going to play, I would probably lean Kentrell Bryce's way, but it wouldn't surprise me if neither one of them play.
Well, let me pose this question to you then, because I have seen it on Twitter. I've been asked about it personally. Do you think, since it is against Old Dominion, and Blake Martin has played well of late, Jerry Kraft has had a pretty good season, Tevin King shown at least that he can make some plays, do you think maybe they just hold Dixon out regardless, just for the sake of giving him an additional week before the Rice game?
I don't think you say that because it's Old Dominion, because you're sending the wrong message to your roster.
Well, regardless of whatever you tell your players that he's sitting out, do you sit him out because it's just Old Dominion?
I don't.
I agree. I don't think you do either. Especially
goes back to Herm Edwards.
Exactly. No matter who the opponent is,
you play to win the game.
Right. And Kenneth Dixon gives you the best chance to win. I mean, when he left the game against UAB, he had 3 touchdowns. So
Kenneth Dixon plays the second half. This game, it wasn't close as it was.
Oh, no question about
it. But it's 56-14 if Kenneth Dixon plays.
Right. Kenneth, when he left the game, he had 79 rushing yards on 15 carries, was averaging over 5 a carry, had 3 touchdowns, and then also, of course, he hadn't really gotten much of a chance to participate in the passing game at that point because he was running the ball so well, but he did have 1 catch for 17 yards. So,
I know your man crush plays for UAB.
He does, Jordan Howard.
But I would say that Kenneth Dixon proved that he is a better overall running back than Jordan Howard.
Jordan Howard had 148 yards and a touchdown. in that game.
But he was a non-factor in the passing game.
Oh, completely. Didn't register a catch. They didn't look. They weren't looking to throw it to him. They really weren't looking to throw it to him anyway.
I'm talking about a complete running back. Well, Kenneth Dixon's a better complete running back.
You're not going to get much argument from anybody that Kenneth Dixon is a more complete, is the most complete running back, at least in Conference USA. And I would venture to say that probably the most complete running back, including his ability to pass block, in any of the group of five. But Jordan Howard is certainly an exceptional running back.
Yes, he is. He's very good.
And Louisiana Tech's done a good job all season long. I mean, they're ranked 28th in the country in rushing defense for a reason. He's done a really good – he did a really good job of getting of racking up 148 yards against the Bulldog defense.
Xavier Woods, once again, block, kick, interception. You'll go a couple of weeks where you feel like he's disappeared, but there's a lot of the reason why Tech's had so much success is because of Xavier Woods playing that center field and taking the top off the offense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Registered his fifth interception on the season. It's crazy to imagine a safety having five picks. I mean, gosh, just think about that for a second, that he, from the safety position where he's won a couple of games without having anything, he's got five interceptions, one of the leading tacklers on the team. Still,
he's a sophomore.
And he's a sophomore. That's the biggest thing. He's a sophomore. You can't say enough about what Xavier Woods has done so far in this offense. I mean, defense.
Trent Taylor had another good game, minus his fumbled, his muffed punt. Not enough can be said about how not special Tech special teams are.
Agreed. And let me tell you something else. Trent Taylor has had two fumbles this season. Regardless of whether or not it appears, because fumbles are they're memorable. They certainly are. They're memorable. And you remember when they mess up like that. But don't overblow it.
How many times has he touched the ball this year?
Absolutely. How many times has Trent Taylor had the ball in his hands? How many times has he made plays? How many times has he returned punts? How many times has he had successful fair catches? So sure, do you ever want to have a muffed punt? No. But when it happens, it's not the end of the world. Because I've had...
Turnovers are unfortunate no matter what, but because of the nature of football, they're going to happen. You just have to make sure they don't happen at inopportune times, like, i.e., Northwestern State game.
Absolutely. And the defense was able to salvage that, that turnover anyway. But regardless, Trent Taylor, as many times has had an opportunity to make a play, I'm giving him a pass on the fumble, because he's done too much for this football team with really a depleted wide receiver core, because every other week you're either missing Sterling Griffin or Paul Turner. You've now missed Hunter Lee for a couple of weeks and will continue to miss Hunter Lee. Tyrone Grant, redshirt senior, got his first catch 2 weeks ago and then got in with another catch last week. Tyrone Grant.
And looked very good.
Yeah. So
he's a guy early in fall camp that he really had a good fall camp, and I kept wondering, why haven't we seen much of Tyrone Grant? Well, he was for depth purposes. You don't want to roll everybody out just in case he gets hurt. You got to hold your cards close to your vest.
Certainly so. Sophomore Trent Taylor. Sophomore, one of the most experienced wide receivers on the team at this point.
And another injury from Saturday, Cody Sokol went down for one series of UAB's offense. He went to the locker room and came back. It's hard to know what that was, but you can't think it's very serious if he came back and played.
No, I would assume he went back to the locker room for an X-ray, most likely.
I doubt that Legion Field is as awful as that stadium is. It makes a lot of stadiums seem like the Taj Mahal.
Well, regardless, he went to the locker room to get checked out for something. From the way he threw after that, I would assume probably some kind of a shoulder. Because he didn't throw the ball as well in the second half as he did in the first half, and he didn't throw the ball as well after that. But, I mean, there's certainly no reason to think that Cody Sokol shouldn't be just fine.
But when you look at another guy that stood out Saturday was someone that had not – looked that great. Connor Smith, all year he hadn't looked wonderful, but he had a coming out party of pride of my alma mater, Fountain Blue High School. Connor's a former quarterback in high school. He's put on a lot of weight to play the inside receiver position. He caught every ball thrown his way, I think, Saturday. Made some clutch catches. If he continues to do that, another sophomore.
Yeah, four catches, 30 yards for Connor. And you can't mention – I mean, you didn't mention it, and it's certainly worth mentioning how well he blocked. with Connor Smith blocked really well. I mean, he didn't. He had no problem at all getting out there and laying a couple of hits on people to open up Trent Taylor. For one, they had swing pass to Trent Taylor out on the far sideline, and Connor Smith was over in that direction, and he opened him up the sideline with a big block. Certainly, I was impressed by the way Connor Smith played.
Let's take this break, other side of the break, a little bit more UAB talk, and then at 6:30 we're going to have Casey Bowman from GoMiddle.com, the Middle Tennessee Rivals.com site, going to join us to talk a little Conference USA football and basketball. With this being a bye week, thought we'd get some more perspective on the season. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Jay Ford here, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to your questions on the air.
Did get a question on Twitter from Kelly asking us about injuries and also the formation there from the first drive that was so successful with Tevin King. That's the best we've seen Tevin King look since his freshman year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And unfortunately, DirecTV blacked out the game right before it started, and so I was having some difficulties getting the game on TV. And I was following along on Twitter, frantically trying to find somewhere to watch it. Of course, Jason Jones, our buddy, bailed me out. And so I missed getting to watch that on the initial live, but I did go back and watch some of it online. And Tevin King ended up having three carries for 33 yards and caught a pass, had one catch for 14 yards. And honestly, Tevin King looked good. He looked shifty. He was quick. Certainly still not, maybe fast, but definitely agile. And it just goes to show that Skip Holtz is not what we thought he was, what everybody was making him out to be, which is three runs in a cloud of dust and then punt the football away. He's showing that he can be versatile. And I don't think you can give any credit to, we could give some credit to Tony Peterson. I'm not saying that Tony Peterson doesn't have a part in that offense anymore, but I think, again, that this is Skip Holtz.
Yeah, and what it really does is it shows the diversity of Tech's offense and really makes teams, whenever they watch tape, know that they have to respect that formation.
That's just one more thing that you now have to include in your defensive game plan in case they pull it out.
Now that we've seen a multiple offense and a multiple defense from Tech, it makes you wonder why every team doesn't go multiple.
Well, I agree, and I think part of it may be personnel. You really recruit a certain type of athlete to run a certain type of system. And when Skip got here, he had some of the players left over from Dykes' era, a la Tevin King and Kenneth Dixon, and he's got some that he's brought in himself. And
I would disagree with that fact.
Okay,
you can be multiple. We've seen that this year with almost any personnel. They've lined up 2 5-foot-9 inside receivers at the same time, put a 5'7" outside receiver on the field, and a 5'8", or let's call him 5'10", and Paul Turner at outside receiver.
Okay, but that's out of necessity, though. I'm still saying
that they've been successful with that, so you can be multiple with any roster.
Well, they've been successful to an extent, I would say. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's certainly.
And they've got a former high school quarterback turned inside receiver,
right,
Connor Smith, who's an all walk-on,
right,
playing inside receiver.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it.
Who right now is their big body receiver on the inside.
There's no doubt about it that it can be successful. I'm just saying that as for the rest of the country, typically you're gonna recruit a certain type of athlete to operate at a certain position in a certain scheme.
Let's bring it closer to home. You got LSU and Baton Rouge.
Sure.
Everybody across the country knows that Les Miles is going to pound the ball.
No doubt about it.
And even when you bring Cam Cameron, one of the best offensive minds in the world, you're still pounding the football. You can't tell me that with their roster, they couldn't go multiple.
Oh, no doubt about it, especially with a dual threat quarterback like Anthony Jennings and to an extent Brandon Harris as well. No, I completely agree. They could.
But
would they have success?
When you think about that at the top of college football in the SEC, they all could do it. And if they can do it and create the matchup problems that they can, why not?
Well, they're having success doing what they're doing already.
That's arguable.
Most are. Now, Oregon is a team that's
very multiple.
That's very multiple. Have they won a national championship in recent years?
No.
Okay. Who has? Alabama. What do they do? The same thing.
Well, Auburn and Florida State were very multiple last year.
I would say Auburn more so than Florida State. I mean, Florida State was still just, you've got really big-bodied, athletic wide receivers and a quarterback with a big arm, and you throw it to them, and they go get it.
They still ran the football.
Sure, no, they did. I'm just saying that as from multiple, I don't think that those neither one of those teams are nearly as multiple as Oregon or what we're talking about.
See, I don't think Oregon's as multiple as you're thinking because they don't get real big and like Tech has gotten this year where they'll put extra offensive lineman on the line.
Right,
and,
right.
So they don't do that. That's when you're talking about multiple, that's truly multiple.
Sure. And then the addition, we're talking about the smaller bodies and stuff, but really another thing that's multiple for Louisiana Tech is just having a fullback and a tight end in the offense, and they've been able to do that with Ricky Jones and Marlon Seitz. Marlon Seitz had a couple of carries this past week as well. He had a couple of carries and certainly opened up some holes with some blocks, and then you've got Josh Gaston lining up at the end of the line of scrimmage. He's got three catches on the season. When he goes out there, he's out there to block, and that's just another multiple look.
But all that to say this, at Tech's level of college football, it's almost a necessity to be multiple.
Agreed.
Because
no, I can agree with
when
that.
You go into any environment, you've got to keep everyone guessing. They can't know what's coming. They got to think that the kitchen sink is coming at their face. And it does every week.
Sure, and it makes it so much more difficult for these defensive coordinators to come up with a game plan because they have to account for so many different aspects, which I think is what has helped Manny Diaz be so successful, is that his defense really is
simple.
He's made it very simple. And for the most part, the defense that they run has a lot of the same – each week they keep a lot of the same stuff and just incorporate it in different ways or at different times, bring different players on blitzes, and they disguise everything really well. And so because they're disguising what they're doing, the players don't have to go out there and learn a bunch of different stuff each week for a different team. You can go out there and you can run your defense.
Jason just tweeted at us over under of how many times we can say multiple in one segment.
So far, I would give it at least a good 35.
Too bad it hasn't been a drinking game. Somebody could have turned it into quite a drinking game at home. We appreciate
Boy
that
Scouts.
Tweet.
Boy Scouts, Jay Ford. Boy,
the Boy Scouts are not standing in here.
They've
already come through.
The Boy Scouts are gone.
So I can say drinking games. Even though I have never participated in one. In my life, went to my first party as a 30-year-old where a keg was. That tells you the kind of person that I am.
Yeah, I've never been in the same place as a keg, at least not knowingly.
Not to throw John under the bus, but I would imagine John Tabor's been to enough parties where kegs were present to make up for both of our lack of that.
Me and my roommate had a kegerator when I was in the service.
So is that a yes? If you've made up for it for the times that we have not?
Yes.
At least he owns it.
Yes.
He owns it. He said, you know what? No. We didn't just have a keg. We had a kegerator. I don't even know what that is.
It's a refrigerator that you put a keg in, and you can tap the keg without opening it. More on to more family-friendly topics. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, Casey Bowman will join us from GoMiddle.com, talk a little Conference USA sports. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, and of course the host here of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to them on the air.
Casey, how's it going, my man?
Doing good, man. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. So, Middle Tennessee, just talk, update us since we talked last. How's the season been going?
Well, I guess we can start on the gridiron there. Of course, Middle's coming off a pretty disheartening loss. Really had a good chance to get one of those statement wins with kind of a national name, at least in their own building with BYU, and really just kind of came out and laid an egg, especially in the second half. A game that was 7-7 at halftime, and they got outscored 20-0 in the second frame there. So, pretty disheartening there on that front. Of course, they dropped to 5-4 on the year. Still 4-1 in Coosa, which is a great showing for them, especially in year two here. And three games left on the schedule. They got to hit in the road to Florida this week, play FIU, come back home for their final home game on the 22nd against FAU, and then before they go back out on the road to face UTEP for the season finale. So still a lot for Middle to play for. Obviously, I don't think anybody's predicting a Marshall loss anytime soon, but for Middle, I think they really have their eye on another 8-win season. If they can make it happen, it'd be 3 years in a row. Obviously, something that they've never done since making the leap into the 1A division here. So still a lot for them to play for, and a lot of ground to cover in regards to the bowl season.
With this being a bye week for Louisiana Tech, we're going to talk a little recruiting, so I figured we'd talk a little recruiting for Middle and then the conference as a whole. Right now, Louisiana Tech sitting really with the most commitments in the conference at 22, picking up number 22 today. With FAU sitting in the lead, I think Tech may pull in the lead with the points with this three-star dual-threat quarterback today. I would say that Middle Tennessee is probably kind of disappointed with their six commitments sitting right now.
Well, to an extent, yes, but this year's class is going to be pretty light to begin with. Heading into the year, they only had about 17 or 18 slots that they could fill, just from not a lot of turnover coming out of this year's class. So it's going to be a pretty light class from the get go. One thing they really wanted to stress was hitting some of those needs that they always try to address, on the O line, picking up some athletes who can be plugged in here and there. But they're looking more for the quality, not so much the quantity this year. Looking at commitment list, right now they've got 2 3-star kids. They actually had a third who was dropped down in the rankings not too long ago, back down to that 2-star level. But on paper, it's not going to stand out to anybody just from a numbers perspective. They're sitting ninth right now behind Southern Miss, and there's a good bit of distance between them and the rest of the group right now in Conference USA. But one thing that they're really kind of addressing right now is that quality prospect. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them make some ground up here just off getting some of these 3 and even 4-star kids that they're in on.
What do you think about this FAU class? They're sitting at 8 3-star commitments out of 20 total, and really some guys with some big time offers. What do you make of that?
It's really nothing new for FAU or even FIU, who's also doing pretty well this year. Those Florida schools have always recruited well. That's one thing I can say about those two programs. And obviously they were in the Sun Belt with Middle for all those years, so I've grown familiar with those programs. And the Florida schools always recruit well. It's for whatever reason they've never really been able to put it all together on the field per se. Now where that comes from, if these recruits are just being overhyped, and maybe there's a reason why they're not going to these BCS level programs, maybe that's something to do with it. Of course, coaching and with these schools, there's been so much turnover over the years. It's really hard to if you got a new guy coming in with a different system, and all of a sudden that 3 or 4-star kid, he might not even see the field because he doesn't fit the system that coach is looking at. So it's nothing new. I'd like to see those coaches in those programs get a fair shake this time around and kind of have some time to bring those recruits in for their system. But you know, honestly, not really surprised. You know, these guys have been doing it for a while. You know, and it's easy to recruit in South Florida. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, there's the talent. And you look at Louisiana Tech basketball. They recruit the state of Florida very, very heavily. So the state of Florida is loaded in every sport. So you're right. It is to be expected at this point. Going back to the gridiron, any surprises in the conference thus far, especially in the standings?
You know, I was surprised to see Rice kind of turn it around. I don't think I really expected that so much. You know, they've really come around these last few weeks, and you know, even La Tech. You know, at the beginning of the year, I didn't expect to see them kind of run the table so much as they have. But you know, Manny Diaz has got that defense playing great ball right now, and you know, middle fans are all too familiar with Manny. So you know, in one way they're happy to see him have some success here, and the other way they're kind of wishing that maybe they could tone it down a little bit. But you know, surprised with those two squads. You know, Southern Miss, you know, we talked about them a little bit last time, and I've really been kind of impressed with them. You know,
I am too.
You know, granted they gave up 63 to Marshall the other day, but they, you know, they had them on the ropes there in that first half. It was you know, kind of impressive. You know, I really see Todd Monken making some strides there with that program.
You know, you talk about Southern Miss. I don't think they are far from turning the corner, especially with they've got some youth on that roster, and that defensive line is something to behold, to be honest. If they could just get them to play week in and week out like they did against Louisiana Tech, their record will be a whole lot better than it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, I don't think they're too far out. And the last time we talked, I kind of had that feeling that they were getting closer. But over these last few weeks, you know, they might not be putting the wins up, but you get that sense that you know, this is a program, you know, with a lot of history in Conference USA, and they're definitely on their way back.
I'm looking at they're announcing the final four, for lack of a better term, right now. And man, those are a head scratcher. Mississippi State 1, Oregon 2, TCU 4, Florida State 3, Alabama 5, and Arizona State 6. Sorry, I had to take that little tangent. It's on our TV right now. As the guy says in the show before hours, at this point in the season, it's completely irrelevant. It's like preseason rankings. Anyway, back to Conference USA sports. We'll go to basketball now. Middle, I know they lost a whole lot off of last year's squad, but Kermit always seems to figure things out. What's up his sleeve this year?
You know, right now there's not a whole lot of optimism. Middle had an exhibition game last night against Martin Methodist, an NAIA school, kind of local to where we are here in Tennessee, and they lost 76-67, which definitely was a head scratcher. You know, kind of gets the message boards in meltdown mode there a little bit. But you know, I'm not one to put too much credence into exhibition games. It was a game where 10 players, you know, played double digit minutes for Kermit, and it was more of just a feeling out process than anything else. But you know, obviously, yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, they lose a lot from last year's squad. Now what they have coming back, you know, they've got some talent there. You know, a guy like Jock Rozier, he's kind of, you know, your real physical guy in the post. He's never been a scorer for Middle Tennessee, but then again, he's always had to play behind, you know, a LaRon Dendy, who was a Sun Belt Player of the Year, a Sean Jones, last year's Conference USA Player of the Year. So he's been playing behind some pretty talented guys too. So he's, you know, he's always been heralded as a great practice player, but this is his year, you know, and he's a senior. This is supposed to be his year to step up and kind of you know, take that next step. And, you know, last night he goes 0-for-3 from the field in 18 minutes. He fouls out. Not the most confidence boosting performance out of a senior laden player there. You know, Kermit, he definitely hit up JUCO ranks and lower division ranks in the recruiting process this past year. One guy that I'm telling anybody, you know, with a set of eyes to take a look at when they play Middle Tennessee will be DJ Jones. He's a guard. He's a small guy, but he can jump out of the gym, you know, with a plus 40 inch vertical, great shot. He's going to be a scorer from Middle Tennessee, originally out of Chicago. Went through the JUCO ranks, was a big-time scorer in the JUCO ranks last year. So, you know, they've just got so many new pieces to the puzzle here. It's going to take Kermit some time to figure things out. And traditionally, Kermit Davis's teams are more inclined to start slow during the year and then really come on strong towards the end of the year. That's kind of been his MO, you know, in the 10-plus years that he's been in Middle Tennessee. So I don't expect it to be any different this year. You know, obviously with the success that the program's had over the last few seasons, expectations are higher, and it's a lot harder to tell your fan base, hey, we might take a step back this year. Nobody wants to hear that at this point in time. Everybody wants to progress and, you know, and have a team that's going to, you know, make a run back to the dance or, you know, to the NIT or something to show for themselves at the end of the year. And I don't know if they're going to have that team this year, to be honest.
What do you see as far as Conference USA, in your opinion, how do you see it playing out in basketball?
Well, yeah, I think we touched on this last time we spoke. Definitely La Tech. I mean, you look at them, and just from top to bottom, I don't think there's a more talented roster in the conference. I don't see anybody really kind of overtaking them. There's a few teams, you know, UTEP, Southern Miss, you know, UNC Charlotte. Even there's some teams that are going to be good and that are going to give them, you know, a run for their money. And you know, the thing that I'm curious about with La Tech this year is, you know, they had such great success last year, but now they're going to have that target on their backs. Everybody's going to know it. Everybody's going to gun for them. And they're going to get everybody's best shot every time they play them, especially in conference play. So I'm curious to see how they respond to that and those expectations. Team like Southern Miss, you know, obviously they lose their coach, but, you know, they still have a lot of talent there. You know, I think the East and the West, you know, you look at a team like UTEP, you know, who came on strong at certain points last year, and Tim Floyd, you know, for all the flack that he gets for, you know, his past, he really did a heck of a coaching job last year with that team, especially with the adversity that they faced early on in the season. So I think you're looking at a pretty top heavy conference, you know, with Middle Tennessee potentially being kind of that middle team to the end of or to the bottom of the top tier, and then everybody up that I mentioned, I could see it shaking out just like that.
Well, you probably have more knowledge of Western Kentucky than most would because of the proximity from Bowling Green to Murfreesboro. Do you expect Western Kentucky to come into the conference in their first year and compete?
I wouldn't be shocked, and that's one team I didn't mention there. And and I don't think you can go anywhere in a basketball conversation that within a conference that Western Kentucky's in and not mention them. They're, you know, for those that aren't familiar with their program, they are very steep and rich in tradition. You know, this is a program that when you look at them on paper, you wouldn't think much of them, but you know, they've been to Final Fours, they've been to multiple NCAA tournaments. They have success. They've put players in the league. It's, you know, a program that they really hang their hat on over there in Bowling Green. So Ray Harper is their head coach. He's he's a very strong-minded, very, I wouldn't say cocky, but he's very he knows what he's got in his team, and
he's
he knows
confident.
How to get the best out of it. Yeah, he's got an aura of confidence about him, and his teams usually take on that persona, which is something where in years where, you know, even like last year where they kind of had a down year, but even then you never really saw them go into a game thinking we're not going to get this one. You know, they always think they're going to win, and you know, to their credit, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They're very like I said, rich in tradition over there.
Appreciate you joining us, Casey. One last thing. I don't know how much do you pay attention to women's hoops?
Pretty well. Obviously, with Middle Tennessee here alone, you know, that's another team that consistently goes to the NCAA tournament. They get a lot of people out to those games, or top 25 attendance, you know, year in and year out. So in these neck of the woods, you know, ladies' hoops is not forgotten.
So how do you see Tyler Summitt coming in this year and coming into the Conference USA and trying to make some waves?
You know, that's one thing not a lot of people talk about, but I think it's one of the more intriguing storylines to all of sports this year within Conference USA. You know, when you have the last name Summitt, you know, there's going to be expectations off the bat, let alone this kid, you know, never coached a game in his life. But when you come from that family and your mom is who she is, and, you know, and Tyler Summitt was a guy who was around that program year in and year out. So you know he picked up things that no one else would ever think about, you know, when it comes to coaching or you know, being a leader for a program. So I'm curious to see. He's obviously wet behind the ears. I thought it was a slam dunk hire for La Tech Lady Basketball. It's a win-win situation. You know, at the end of the day, the expectations of him won't be crazy through the roof. You know, if he succeeds, then it's probably one of the best hires in women's basketball for college, you know, on the college level that I can think of in quite some time. So he's getting the world is his oyster, so to speak. If he can get that team bought in, and you know, especially he's got to be able to recruit. So you know, I think people are going to need to be patient with him, and you know, and he's going to have to learn. He's been around women's basketball and you know, obviously at Tennessee for so long, but you know, this is his show, and he's got to learn how to run it his way. He can't just do it, you know, how he's always seen it. So it's going to take some time, I think, but a really intriguing storyline there.
Appreciate you joining us, Casey. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, so myself, Twitter, C_BoRivals, C_BoRivals. Not the easiest thing to say, but I like it. Of course, Go Middle is just @GoMiddle. And, check us out online, GoMiddle.com.
Appreciate it, Casey.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Casey Bowman joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio from GoMiddle.com, the Middle Tennessee Rivals.com site, talking a little Conference USA sports. So let's take this break. Outside of the break, a little basketball talk here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared King, staff writer, BleedTechBlue.com, joining me. A couple of sponsors, then we'll get into some hoops.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7, brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the phone lines, 888-993-7762. That's the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline, 888-993-7762. Of course, you can tweet us with the hashtag BTB Radio on Twitter, and we will answer your questions on the air.
Jared, how do you see basketball for Louisiana Tech playing out?
Well, if you look at the schedule, you've got a couple of opportunities to really shine. Temple game early. Of course, you have NC State. And then, of course, you have to go up to Syracuse. I think there's an opportunity for this team. I think this team could win two of the three of those. I just don't know that I can buy into them beating Syracuse, but I still think that it'll be a good game, a close game, closer than people, at least not privy to how good this program is, think it will be. But I could see them. I mean, I certainly could see them winning 28, 29 games this year.
Playing Temple on the road in game two will not be an easy task.
No, I think that's probably the hardest game of the season, which is unfortunate because it comes so early. But I think that's the reason why the difficulty is raised to that point, because it is so early in the season, especially when you have as many newcomers to that rotation as Louisiana Tech. It could be interesting. They could trip up there.
The game of those three that you talk about that I think is probably the most winnable would be NC State.
Yeah.
Temple, second most, Syracuse, they lost a lot off of last year's team, but
it's Syracuse.
It's Syracuse in the Carrier Dome. It's just an impressive atmosphere. They open the season, of course, on the 14th in 3 days at Southern. Tech played a couple of exhibition games, closed scrimmages against Baylor and Oklahoma State. From what I understand, the newcomers made newcomer mistakes, and the veterans made veteran plays against Baylor. Oklahoma State, that was the first game. Baylor was a much better performance. And that's going to be the case for Louisiana Tech all year. This team's going to be – has the potential, let's say that, has the potential to be scary good come March.
I don't think there's any question about it. This team, especially as athletic as it is, as long as it is, the ability to shoot the three is there. I think this team could be a better three-point shooting team than they were a season ago, and that's with losing arguably the best three-point shooting, one of the best three-point shooters Tech's ever seen in Keon McNeil.
How about this? I just realized this on a schedule. 5 of the last 7 games are played inside the Tech.
Oh, that'll be great. That'll be great.
Starting with Florida Atlantic on February 12th, Florida International on February 14th. Then they travel to Charlotte, travel to Old Dominion. Then they close the season, UTEP, UTSA, Southern Miss. Those could be some rocking games inside the Thomas Assembly Center. They say that the red seats for Louisiana Tech, they released a seating chart last week. There are very few seats left in the red for season ticket holders.
No, you're right, and that was one of the things that was most interesting about Tech Madness was the fact that they went ahead and are making the students sit in the student section, and if the student section is full when you get there, then you have no choice but to go up and sit in the blue.
Because, which is part of the student section.
Right, yeah, I mean, the part of the student section, that part there. But
they made it known that you are not to venture outside of your section.
Right.
And they will be, I think they're going to have ushers this year. They're going to have to because of how many season tickets they've sold. But this is going to be a very exciting year. The four of the first six are at home. Of course, they open the season against Southern. Then they travel to I think it's Philadelphia for Temple. Isn't that where Temple is?
Yes.
Then they will host Morehead State, American, Presbyterian, and Samford. Funny thing is, Temple opens the season with American. So they'll have some tape very quickly on American. Then they'll travel to Northwestern State, to Natchitoches, on December 2nd and come back home for Jackson State. Then they'll travel to Lafayette for a game against ULL on December 10th. Then the game against Syracuse. They're not the Orangemen anymore. I know they're just the Orange. In the Carrier Dome on December 14th. I like that four-day break between that one. That's nice. I wish it was longer, but this is basketball, and there are never really, really long breaks. But Tech will be on the road quickly to get to Syracuse. We'll host Nicholls State the 18th. Then we'll travel to Raleigh, North Carolina, to play NC State. They will host a non-D1 in Southern Arkansas from Magnolia, Arkansas, on December 29th, then start conference play at Southern Miss, then at UTEP, at UTSA, and then so on. I like this schedule. I know Coach White was disappointed in his home slate.
Right. He was disappointed with the home slate and then also, of course, disappointed with the SAU December game, December 29th there in the TAC. But he just couldn't get anybody to. He couldn't get anybody to come and fill that spot. There was no one interested in, not for lack of trying, but he ended up having to go with a non-D1 in Southern Arkansas, which is gonna. You'll be at North Carolina State, come home, play Southern Arkansas, and then you've got three more on. You know, the next three on the road. So at least it'll be, not necessarily. It won't be a difficult home game to separate those road trips. And then, of course, it's during the holiday
confidence
season.
Confidence booster.
Right. And then, of course, it's during the holiday season as well.
I'm excited about this season. Everybody that's listened to this show for any length of time knows that I am a basketball fan. It is my favorite sport. I like the parity of college basketball a whole lot more than the lack of parity in college football. You can't say that there's any parity in college football. But it lets the schools, that the lesser-known schools, are competitive in basketball, and that's what makes it fun. You don't know whenever it comes to March Madness who's going to be the Cinderella. Virginia Commonwealth. Do you think anybody would know about Virginia Commonwealth, VCU, if it weren't for basketball?
If you don't call them VCU, I don't know who they are. I mean, I know who they are, but for real though, the casual
for
fan,
real though,
the real for the casual fan, if you call them Virginia Commonwealth, chances are, who's that?
Yep.
Well, that's VCU. Oh, VCU. Didn't they win?
Or Florida Gulf Coast?
Yeah, Florida Gulf Coast. Certainly this schedule. I think this schedule works well for the Bulldogs. I think it works in their favor.
It's harder. It's a harder schedule than last year.
Correct. And really, that's and honestly, they needed that. They needed that last year. Had they had one of these games like Temple or North Carolina State or Syracuse, you have to think maybe that last year could have worked a little differently. Could have worked in their favor, certainly.
Well, you look at the starting five that are. Let's project the starting five without a doubt it'll be the four that we know about with Speedy, Raheem, Alex Hamilton, and Mike Kaiser. number five, the starting five, I would bet that it's Eric McCree. I'd be shocked if it's not Eric McCree.
I mean, I absolutely agree. I think it's Eric McCree as well, and I think most have known that going into the season that most likely it was going to be Eric McCree, and he certainly gives them a stretch four. You know, he can shoot the basketball, very athletic, no questioning his athleticism. I don't necessarily know that he's as scrappy as Chris Anderson was. Chris Anderson just played bigger than
Chris
he really
Anderson
was
a junkyard dog.
Yes, he was. He was such a tough guy, but. I think Eric McCree will fit nicely in this offense.
And you look at some guys that will be in the rotation. Janiah White will be there, the 7-footer from Mississippi. Xavier Stapleton will be there, the 6'6", 2/3 from Mississippi. Kedar Davis, the junior college player, he'll be there. Who else can you think about, Jared, that'll definitely be in the rotation?
Xavier Stapleton will certainly be in that rotation. I think Jacoby Boykins will be in that rotation.
I think it's going to take him a month or so to get into the rotation, but I agree with you.
I agree. I'm not so sure that you'll see Jacoby Boykins at all at that in that Temple game. I don't think Deion Griffin will probably be redshirted.
I could see he and Brandon Shepherd being redshirted.
Right. Well, I think Brandon Shepherd is almost no question that he'll be redshirted. Even from just seeing him at Tech Madness, I don't think that his body's not ready.
Leo Edwards will see a lot of playing time.
Leo Edwards will see some playing time as well.
My dark horse player that I'm not expecting much out of, but he could have a huge year, is Merrill Holden.
And, you know, you said that Merrill Holden was going to be your dark horse for the dunk contest. And
he disappointed.
Yeah, I would say.
I was kind of disappointed in the dunk contest.
Well, I was disappointed in the dunk contest as well. But, I mean, it is what it is.
From what I was told, I think Coach White had just run them through the ringer the two previous days at practice. So they were all sore. You saw Kedar Davis after every dunk was rubbing on his quads.
Right.
So they were feeling it.
Regardless, I think Merrill Holden will make a difference. Who do you see? I know Mike White. He really utilizes his bench, and last year bench scoring was through the roof. Who do you see as that sixth man?
Xavier Stapleton.
I tend to think so as well. And I think Merrill Holden might be number seven right there.
I think Kedar Davis is number
seven. Okay. Well, all right. Well, then that puts Merrill Holden at least eight.
And you can't – Janiah White's going to be somewhere in there too.
Yeah. But
because you're
– no question about
Mike
it.
Mike Kaiser won't play – the whole game.
Mike Kaiser probably won't play many more minutes than he did per game last year, which was just shy of 30 most games. 26, 28 minutes, something like that. And really, I think if you get Mike Kaiser at his potential for 26 to 28 minutes on the defensive side of the ball especially, I mean, you're fine. Janiah White's going to come in and fill almost the exact same hole that Mike Kaiser – I mean, Mike Kaiser doesn't produce a whole lot on the offensive side of the ball, and they don't ask much of him on the offensive side of the ball, and Janiah White will fill that hole, I think, pretty well.
I agree. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, a little recruiting. Sorry, we just talked about basketball. A little football recruiting, Louisiana Tech, and then we'll close the show out with – football talk. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See me and the boys.
Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors and some recruiting.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brewster Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet us your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we will get to them on the air.
With Jamar Smith's commitment, Louisiana Tech moves into first place in the ranking, the class rankings inside of Conference USA, ahead of Florida Atlantic, and then it's through everybody else. Tech has 915 total points. They give points for the where the player is ranked in their position group, where they're ranked in their state, their rating. On Rivals.com, where there's a three-star, what kind of three-star they are, 5.5, 5.6, 5.7. So Tech has 915 points with 22 commitments. UTSA is in third with 690 points. There's a lot of separation.
Right, there's a lot of separation. And look, you know, Louisiana Tech's high ranking can really be attributed to these three-star guys they've got. Rashid Bonnet is a 5.5 three-star. But last week, this Jordan Bradford that they got out of St. Stanislaus is the highest-ranked two-star that you can be, 5.4. But then you look at Cameron Eloff. He's a three-star.
He committed last week. We haven't talked about him.
Right, Cameron Eloff. We have not mentioned Cameron Eloff. 6'3".
Call him about 290 probably now.
Yeah, I would say 290-pound offensive lineman out of Parkway. Plays guard at Parkway. Got long arms.
Center probably.
Right, I'm thinking more of a center. But regardless, Eloff is a really, really nice commitment for Louisiana Tech. 5.6 three-star. The three-star ranking goes up to 5.7. If you're higher than 5.7, then you become a four-star. So he's a solid three-star.
And when you look at the offers that Eloff held whenever he committed to Tech, Cincinnati, Georgia Tech, ULL, Louisville, Southern Miss, TCU, Tulsa, Wake Forest. It's a big get for the Bulldogs.
No doubt about it. And he, you know, Cameron really liked TCU. Of course, every site that's geared towards a particular school is going to write about, oh, how much they're just swooning over this individual university. So it's hard to tell, but certainly a big get against some quality competition for Louisiana Tech. And then Jamar Smith is a 5.6 three-star. That is the dual-threat quarterback that Louisiana Tech picked up today out of Meridian, Mississippi. 6'1", 220 pounds. Listen, you were mentioning earlier that Jamar Smith is wanting to play baseball as well. And that may have been part of the reason why he came to Louisiana Tech, because Louisiana Tech very well may be allowing him to play baseball and football. And, of course, we haven't gotten to speak with him yet, so we're not totally sure. But these baseball sites are listing Jamar Smith at 6'2".
I saw him at Tech's last game, the homecoming game against Western Kentucky. I wouldn't say he's 6'2". He's somewhere between 6'2". He's big enough. That's the important part. Probably the highest profile commitment for Tech thus far would be Johnny Shaw, safety out of West Orange Stark High School in Orange, Texas. A one-time TCU and Texas commitment.
Right.
5.7, just on the verge of being a four-star.
Exactly, 0.1 from away from being a four-star, 69th in the state, 35th at his position, and this is Texas. This is a big state. So 69th in the state, Johnny Shaw very well could be one of the most athletic players in this recruiting class for Louisiana Tech. He's got tremendous upside. And really, like you said, he is the most high-profile recruiter commit that Louisiana Tech's got. Out of 22, they've got 22 commitments right now. Football season's not even over yet. Before the season even started, they were at 17. This is a great recruiting class for Louisiana Tech, and most of these players are coming from pretty close.
They draw about it. Let's call it a 500-mile radius. Yeah, that's really the max that they're going to come from.
Yeah, we'll say 500 miles, but
majority of them are within 350.
I would say
miles.
Yeah, a majority of them are within 350 miles, and a lot of them are from right here in Louisiana. They're right here in state. A lot of them are right across this I-20 corridor, and you know, that's something that Diaz and Oscar Giles, and really enough cannot be said about Joe Sloan, and
Blake Baker,
and Blake Baker as well. He's really hit the recruiting trail hard, but not enough can be said about Joe Sloan, particularly from the recruiting class last year as well.
And you look at the 5.4 two stars, which are the ones that are on the verge of being three stars. that may be where some of Tech's, in my opinion, better players are. LaDante Davenport from Northwood and Shreveport, a 6'2", 260-pound defensive lineman. Brandon Derman, a middle linebacker from Tyler Lee, 6'2", 230. Dante Williams from Parkway, a linebacker, 6'2", 205. Trey Spencer, the teammate of Johnny Shaw from West Orange Stark, 5'11", 160 athlete. I think he'll probably play a corner would be my guess. Just a, he's a freak athlete. Jaquees Dancy from Junction City, a running back who has unbelievable size and speed. TJ King from Irving MacArthur High School, 6'4", 220. Looks like Tarzan. And he is absolutely shredded. I see him playing kind of the, I think they call it the Viper role, where Houston Bates is playing right now. And we talked about it Saturday during the game with Jason that we could see Vontarius Dora playing that position next year if they can find a big defensive end out of the JUCO ranks.
Well, you still don't necessarily have to go get a big defensive end. Deldrick Canty has played really well this season.
That's a fair point.
Deldrick Canty's played well. Deldrick Canty has put on some size, and I think Canty
can. He's huge.
He's absolutely. And I think he could play on that opposite end, and then you stand Dora up. Now, whether or not Dora – Houston Bates has been pretty good in coverage. I mean, as good as you can ask for a defensive end.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that Vontarius Dora, at least at this point of his career, is as good in coverage maybe as Bates. Of course, it's hard to tell because he never dropped. I mean, rarely does he drop back into coverage. Something I wanted to mention about Jaquees Dancy, the kid has a 6'3" high jump, good enough for second in the state. He's out of Junction City, Arkansas. Good enough for second in the state.
Lives in Louisiana, by the way.
Right.
Close to Summerfield.
But he's 5'10". He's 5'10", and he jumped 6'3". So the athleticism in this class is there. There's no question about it. There's a lot of athletes in this class.
And then going back to the class, Ephraim Kitchen from Batesville, Mississippi at South Panola. Year in and year out, one of the best programs in the state of Mississippi, a 5'9" corner. Had some SEC interest. I think Auburn was really flirting with an offer. I don't know if they ever offered him a committable offer, but we're very high on Kitchen. Jordan Bradford, one of the most recent commitments as well, out of St. Stanislaus in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. A defensive tackle more than likely for Louisiana Tech, 6'2", about 270, really explosive. Ethan Reed, an offensive lineman, also out of Orange, Texas, just another high school. Little Cypress. Mauriceville, 6'4", 272. He was at the Western Kentucky game as well. I got a chance to see him. Great-looking prospect, big frame. That's all that you can ask for out of offensive lineman. Aaron Robertson out of Huntington High School in Shreveport. He's a 5'3", very underrated. I think he probably deserves to be a three-star. There's several of these guys that I think deserve to be three-stars. Aaron Robertson stands out to be one of those. He's extremely explosive. I see him playing defensive back as well. Colin Scott, a linebacker out of Manvel, Texas, 6', 200 pounds. He's probably going to fit that role Terrell Pinson's playing. The strong side linebacker, kind of like a Kenny Vaccaro role for the Saints. A safety inside the box.
And, you know, really, I think Colin Scott may be one of these kids that ends up redshirting. And Lloyd Grogan drops down into that spot and fills in really well for Terrell Pinson. And then that gives Colin Scott an extra year to put on some size.
That'd be scary good. I would love to see Lloyd Grogan down in the box, but that's ultimately going to be the coach's decisions. Brandon Brinson out of Houma, Louisiana, Ellender High School, 6'3", 225, a defensive end, really explosive player, plays quarterback for for Ellender High. Jamarian Johnson might be the most underrated prospect on Tech's class. At 6'4", 215, he's put up monster numbers at Ravel High this year. Tech, if Ravel makes a run to the dome, Tech's going to have to watch and hold on to him if they're not careful. And they know that. Jamarian Johnson has speed to play outside receiver or inside receiver. Just an outstanding prospect, 6'4", 215. I see him playing inside receiver for the Bulldogs. Theron Williams from St. Aug in New Orleans, a 5'10 DB, probably a safety, but absolute ball hawk, good player. Javonte Woodard from Houghton, a long, speedy receiver, 6'2", 200. Devontae Lovett, probably arguably the best offensive lineman outside of Cameron Eloff committed in this class. 6'4", 280, and a strong, of course, the home of Kenneth Dixon. Emmanuel Turner from Magnolia, Arkansas, another D-end, 6'2", 230. And then last but not least, James Jackson from Hainesville, 5'11", 190-pound defensive back. His cousin, Kendrick Jackson, one of Tech's primary targets to finish out the class, currently committed to Arizona. I know the Bulldog coaching staff would love to have him. Plays middle linebacker for Hainesville, the Golden Tornado. Absolutely one of the best linebackers to come out of this area in quite a while.
And, you know, Jonathan, if anyone wants to go to BleedTechBlue.com and look at this recruiting class, they might see that James Jackson doesn't have any stars next to his name. Explain why that is.
He's a late bloomer, for lack of a better term. I added him to the database when he committed. Anybody that knows anything about Hainesville High School football, everybody got the last name Jackson to plays for Hainesville High School, and they're very good. Hainesville has athletes like James all over the place. I don't know what's in the water in Hainesville. Somebody from Hainesville that's listening could probably tell us what their secret formula is. They may not want to tell us.
Right, probably not.
But it's incredible what they're able to do in Hainesville. And it's a blessing for Louisiana Tech that a guy like James has flown on the radar. And he and Kendrick are first cousins. I don't know if they're first or second or what, but they're cousins. So that will help Tech's chances in getting Kendrick to flip his commitment from Arizona to Louisiana Tech. What I see Tech trying to finish this class out with, maybe a big defensive end from a junior college or a transfer, dare I say. You're at 22. So you've only got three spots left. Offensive line, I still think they're going to want an offensive tackle. Maybe Kevin Dotson from South Louisiana. O'Shea Dugas from Northside High School in Lafayette. Offensive tackle is a place they've got to get a commitment. So that's a place to watch for the Bulldogs. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll finish up the show and talk a little football. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher at BleedTechBlue.com. 8 minutes left in the show.
Be quick.
It'll be a quick one.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, it's not too late to tweet in your questions with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we'll get to them on the air.
Well, Jared, two games remain for the Bulldogs. Old Dominion and Rice.
Yeah, we have to go up to Norfolk, take on the Monarchs of Old Dominion, led by quarterback Taylor Heineke. That's a noon Central Time kickoff, not 11 a.m., but noon. And then, of course, Dreyfus Jackson and the Owls will come to Louisiana Tech, to Joe IA Stadium, the Saturday after Thanksgiving, which is an 11 a.m. kickoff.
I think Tech wins out.
No question. I think there's no question that Louisiana Tech wins out. I'll tell you what.
Tell us why.
Rice goes to Marshall this weekend, and Marshall is favored by 21. And I think they'll beat them by more than that. I think Marshall beats them by 28. That offense is not good, and that defense has played well against bad teams. Louisiana Tech is 27th. In the country in rushing offense, 27th in the country in rushing defense, 28th in the country in total defense. They're second in the country in most interceptions. Third in the country in most interceptions. Louisville has this crazy number of 22 interceptions this season. Regardless, that defense for Louisiana Tech is real. I think Old Dominion's Taylor Heineke does not throw for what he's been throwing. He's averaging nearly, I think it's like nearly 310 yards per game through the air. When we'll get to that more, of course, next week. But I don't think he has a good day. I think it's going to be Brandon Dowdy-esque. And Marshall, I really don't think that any Louisiana Tech fans have to worry about that game either. Dreyfus Jackson, again, not a good quarterback. Louisiana Tech has done a really good job of eating teams alive that have poor quarterbacks. I mean,
or if you're one-dimensional, and that's what it means. Whatever.
Well,
you've got,
yeah, if you're one-dimensional, sure. And both of these teams are one-dimensional. Old Dominion is one-dimensional. They're going to throw the ball. Rice is one-dimensional. They're going to do their best to run the ball. Neither team has been great at doing it against quality opponents, and I don't think Louisiana Tech will have any trouble with it. I really don't.
Jason corrects me. Four games left.
Of course, you have the Conference USA Championship game and then the bowl game.
And he also says, have to do his research, but maybe the first time Tech has ever played 14 games in a season. Probably right.
Probably so. I mean, because you have the championship game in Conference USA.
I'm not good enough at math to do the Segarin predictor thing. It doesn't even make sense to me. That's what smarter people than me can do. And there is somebody smarter than me on the Bleed Tech Blue message board, the Tech Drive community, that has done just that. And he says that if the game were today, that Tech would be, let's see, I've lost it again.
I remember it if you can't find it.
You and your photographic memory.
Marshall, if Tech was to play Marshall today, they would be around a 5.86.
5.06.
5.06.
On a neutral site, underdog. It would be a 1.84 point underdog. At home,
Tech would actually be favored.
1.38 points.
Tech would be favored against Marshall if they were at home. They would be less than a touchdown dog on the road. Yet Rice is a 21-point dog.
Given that fact, enough cannot be said about this coaching staff that Skip Holtz has built and their job that they've done in two seasons.
Agreed, no question about it. And really, a lot of the newcomers, the ones that are here for the first season, Oscar Giles, Blake Baker, of course Manny Diaz, they get a lot of the attention, but the coaches that came in last year, Matt Moore, Tony Peterson, Joe Sloan, Tim Rattay, those guys deserve just as much credit. Jabbar Jalouk, certainly they all deserve, they deserve a lot of credit too, because Matt Moore has done amazing things. It is amazing what he has done with that offensive line after just one season. There's no question about it. Louisiana Tech is number two in the conference, right behind Marshall, in sacks given up this year. They've only given up, I believe, it was 10 total sacks so far this season, and Marshall's given up 8.
Not enough can be said also for what good quarterback play can do for your offense. You got to get rid of the ball when you're getting pressure. You can't take sacks. Lost yardage plays are drive killers. So that's key as well. Next season, I hate to talk about next season already, but we will, just for a couple minutes. They could be better. This roster, this team could be better next year, and it's all contingent upon quarterback play.
Correct. If Price Wilson comes in and plays at least as well as Cody Sokol has, which let me preface these comments by saying this. I expect Price Wilson to outperform Cody Sokol. If Price Wilson performs at the level that Cody Sokol has thus far, which has been better than I expected and has been much better than what they had a season ago, but if Wilson performs at the level Cody Sokol has performed so far this season, I will be disappointed. Because Price Wilson has a real arm. He can make all of the throws, and he is a smart kid.
He is. And he's got so much ability, and that's what really makes me like this commitment of Jamar Smith even more. He's an athlete. If he doesn't work out at quarterback, which I think he will, you redshirt him next year, and he'll have 2 years to play without Price. That's right.
What does that say for Alex Woodall?
Alex has had surgery this year, and he's definitely missed the entire year. I think Alex ends up being a tight end or an inside receiver or a defensive end.
Defensive end.
He's huge.
Yeah, he is huge. Defensive end. I still kind of felt like defensive end was ultimately where he was going to end up. I'm not sure about his hands. I don't know if he could play tight end or not. I mean, within Skip Holtz's offense, and really as a tight end, you need to block. And he could certainly go out and block. He's gigantic.
Well, let's make this it. Thanks for joining us here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. John, good work on the ones and the twos. Jared, good show. Appreciate it, you. We'll see you back same time, same place next week. We'll talk Old Dominion Louisiana Tech football and some basketball because the season will have been tipped off. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. We'll see you next time right here.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN 97.7. Question.